Test, test. Level check.
Take it.
Ooh, the pressure of the card.
I got you.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, stevebick.com. It's St. Patrick's Day. It's Cheltenham Gold Cup Day. And in fact, on that topic, let me pull up the screen as well. We're going to launch in pretty quickly to a visit with Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad. He's cashed every single day. He's had two or three cashers each day. Nice medium price types, 6-1, 7-1. Very adequate to keep the ball afloat. He's had a couple of placements as well, but he's trying to swing for a couple of walk-off type home runs today. I retweeted and put it out there for you. I haven't put it on the website, but if you're on the internet, just go to the, it's actually a Derby Trail too. If I get a window here, I'll quickly slap it up at the races website as well. Excuse me. And there's a heavy favorite, obviously, that we talked about a little yesterday with Sean Clancy. Sorry about yesterday for those that missed the live broadcast, but that whatever happened with Verizon, regionally or nationwide, whatever it was, it KO'd Sirius's ability to bring in signals. The way we do it, and so they couldn't run a live show. And you can just get it for those that didn't hear yesterday. And I want you to hear yesterday because it included that terrific visit, a couple of terrific visits. Hour one, Joe Pace and his placement at the final table at NHC. And then Dr. Politi, Joel Politi, who we love talking to and rooting for, and had a really nice visit. His horse, Camp Aquila, the summer camp on the Vermont-New Hampshire border for kids with degrees of autism. And clearly, if you visited the website, I put out the links and so forth, and the article that Teresa Gennaro wrote that appeared in Horse Racing Nation, still there, still appearing. it'll appear in perpetuity, such as the internet provides. So that was terrific, and then we had fun with Sean and Tony with a serious, the most serious topic yesterday, if you missed, was Tony with the CTE, brain injury issue that very well may be contributing to some of the associated problems they've really come to light in a big way between the passings of two young men that is just it's just too sad. So hopefully there's something to be gleaned out of the examination of Alex Ganciari's brain, and we'll see. We'll follow that story and see where that goes. The weekend is kind of a It's kind of a quiet weekend. I think basketball continues to and will continue after some of yesterday's wild. It's amazing how this thing produces the wildest results. And we had terrific visits in Hour 3 with Dave Hill and Rich Eng. And when it came to immediate plays yesterday, I hope some people got on board. Rich gave three unders, and I pitched in one under. Mine was Arizona-Princeton, which I just knew by the way Princeton played that was going to end up being an under. It did not occur to me to bet Princeton straight up. I didn't even bet them. I didn't even take points. I just the under. I mean, the under was the only thing. So Rich and I went 3-1 together. Rich, with that Charleston-San Diego game, was an easy cover. Mine was an easy cover, and so was Tennessee-Louisiana last night. The one loss was actually kind of a bad luck loss. Rich had 132.5, and it was at 132 when Furman got that garbage, that extra bucket. To beat, they were already beating Virginia. That seemed certain, and they got an additional three that pushed the lead to what, to four at that point, I guess. So anyway, more importantly, it quashed the attempt at a sweep. So 3-1 yesterday on ideas for you from Rich and I. And I should mention, because I've got some stuff from the last few days. Nice $8 and change winner from Seth on Wednesday. That house builder was a $8 and change winner. So he went 1-for-3, but there was enough of a return that he got you out with a 3-to-1 winner. And now we'll start to focus on the weekend. A couple of things to note, and we'll touch on, undoubtedly, with Nick Tamaro. We'll do New York, the Naira Betts cross country, and it's going to throw you a curveball a little bit. Two from Aqueduct, two from Oaklawn, and then the anchor leg at Rialto. Well, and it's bittersweet, certainly. It's fun to bring attention to Rialto and all the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program kids that are manning the booth and manning the turnstiles and the office, and of course young Nathan Klein, who is doing the calls. This race that they're using as the anchor leg is the Liz Bracken Memorial, and this race of particular interest not just in Arizona at the university but also for Naira. Liz had a long career and was just in any capacity in her career and life around the racetrack and with racetrack organizations, between the university and at Naira, was just widely admired and liked and respected. And her illness and her premature passing, too. Very sad. But we'll pay tribute to Liz in a meaningful way with the Liz Bracken Memorial as part of the cross-country pick five today. Saturday. They're using a second-level New York allowance going a mile as the opener. Then the Whitmore, of course, three quarters at Oaklawn. Back to New York for the Cicada. Six furlongs, and then back to Oaklawn for the Essex, which we gave you the lineup with. Very good, both the sprint and the main track route on the road to the Oaklawn handicap, and of course the Whitmore on the road to the Count Fleet, but the Essex came very good. So it should be an interesting sequence. We'll also obviously talk to Nick about his NHC finish, his best of his contest playing career, most known as a notoriously good live money player, BCBC. Big run in the NHC. I'm getting my first. I'll put the pictures up. I've got step-by-step photos, actually. I wanted to improve my presentation on the corned beef. The corned beef is in the oven. Tina, there's a superintendent's day today, and Tina said, I'll be out early. I'll be out at 2:30. I'll be home at 2:45, 2:50. She says, I want those corned beefs ready. She was very explicit about her interest in the corned beef being ready for her. So I put them in at 8 a.m. and I'm just there. It's an hour, and I'm just starting to. They'll sit there. They'll be in the oven for 6 hours. I did the two of them. It's tough to get a big. My recipe calls for a 4 pound, 5 pound corned beef, but it. You just don't get those anymore. They're smaller, so I did two side by side. Anyway, the aroma is wafting here upstairs. let me give you the coast to coast. We'll talk to Hammer. If Hammer, if you're listening, it looks like hour two for you, Hammer, or maybe hour three. I don't know yet. We'll see. either 10 o'clock, either 7 a.m. for you or 8, one or the other. Nick has got, he's recording something at the top of hour 3, so we'll get him at about 11:20, I think. That's the way it looks. Callie Francois, she'll join us in hour 2, by the way. Laurel, they've got the pot of gold. The pot of gold day. Yeah. The Coast to Coast Pick 5, and I should note that DRF is offering a free bonus PPs of the Coast to Coast with an analysis by Ron Gierkink, who does a very good job, who's got a good opinion. The Coast to Coast tomorrow starts at Gulfstream, 3 at Gulfstream, 2 at Santa Anita tomorrow. It's an all-turf sequence, which is fun, and it's the nice mix. You've got a first level allowance turf sprint at Gulfstream starting at 3:37. That's race 7. Then race 9 is a maiden special, excuse me, going 9 panels over to Santa Anita for a starter allowance going a mile on the grass. Gulfstream, the Silks Run turf sprint stake going 5. And then back to Santa Anita for the nightcap, Rick's China Doll, which goes a mile. So 2 mile turf events at Santa Anita and 2 turf sprints and a turf route. It's a nice variety, actually. It's a nice sequence, all right? So there's the 2 multi-race, multi venue pick fives for the weekend. All right. Shap is going to join us. Scott Shap in a little bit. And Nick and Callie. And yeah, there you go. I've got a couple of other ideas as well. So it's just occurring to me. I'm going to reach for Kev here. And the fact that he is not in, that he's not in Singapore, it just occurred to me. I didn't even ask him about the phone. I guess I should take a second and address our game. Yeah, I don't know, the Colgate Texas game. I'm a little disappointed with the Red Raiders' effort. They didn't play badly. I don't know. The game was weird. The game was an inverse of what was expected. Texas was draining threes like I've never seen, actually. And Colgate was was doing all their work inside. It was very strange the way that game ended up unfolding. The Rice kid was spectacular for Texas. Jesus, he was good. They look like they're formidable. So congratulations to the UT alums and such that are industry. Trey Stiles and Jonathan Kitchen are the two that come to mind. I'm sure there's way more Texas players. And in terms of our first day, very good job by Ivy. I don't know who this is yet. Leading the At the Races. We got 125 players. Ivy, who is calling their bracket reincarnate, and they've picked Gonzaga to win it all. They went 13 for 16. That's a very big day. And there were a couple of people, Chad with Chad's official bracket, and Mike. Senator Durrell, our friend from who's a longtime Derby trailer, they went 14 for 16. So I imagine somebody may have had Princeton or Furman in here. But they clearly had somebody knocked out because the point system for our contest, you have a potential. It gives you what your potential points are. Is how the rankings end up. So, big start for Ivy, who obviously has got a good page moving forward out of the early rounds. So another 16 games today. These 2 days are just so much fun, and so is Saturday and Sunday. So maybe it's good that we're not. I've got to travel Sunday to Ocala, so I'll miss quite a bit, but. You know, today and tomorrow. We got quite a bit going on. We've got Scherzando running in the nightcap today at Aqueduct. Looking forward to that. And using the bug, Jason Weiss. And actually, Colgate comes back tonight, this afternoon. Late this afternoon. They play up at Lake Placid. And I came really close to to twisting Tina's arm. You want to go up to Lake Placid? And then I thought better of it. She wants me, and she wants me home, and she wants my attention until I have to leave again Sunday. Unbelievable. All right, let's try to find Kev, and we'll see if... I'm not sure. I don't know if he's got a separate... If he's got a separate phone for the international situation with the... if he's got a separate phone for... Yeah. Yeah, all right. So we'll see. Let's see if this gets Kev. Because we haven't talked to him since when? Since Ascot? Is that possible? Probably is. Well, I may have to... Case, we may have to... Yeah, that's not working. All right, so let's... I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's reach for Shap, and I will make... Let's see about making arrangements with Kev. He didn't tell me to give him a different... He didn't provide an alternate number. So let's give this one little try. And we'll see if how Kev wants to make this happen. All right. In the meantime, let me reach for Shap. All right. That makes sense. I mean, it's not like Kev's in Singapore. All right. So he's going to call, just heard right back. Kev's going to call us. And so we'll wait on Shap. It'll be easier. And there he, yeah. Okay. So he is using that phone. That's the interesting. Here we go, and let's see what kind of connection we've got. It's always a bit of a mystery. The long shot lad back in Ireland, right on time. Kev.
Good morning, Steve.
How was the?
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you perfect. How was the trip?
Yeah, it was good. It's I don't think I'll ever underestimate flying with a baby again. It's good for us. He was great, but I think the parents took a whack. It took a little time to get over. But no, great to be here. Great to be home. Ireland hasn't changed too much. It's grey. It's a bit rainy, windy. But look, it's St. Patrick's Day today, so it's a good day.
Well, it's St. Patrick's, and it's Gold Cup Day, and it's always festive at Cheltenham. And looking forward, you've had a very good week, cashing every day to 2-3 pops.
Yeah, no, it's been a good day or a good week. Like I think if I'm hard on myself, I think I haven't had my long shots haven't really placed as they kind of historically do, and a few of them have been running. Okay to hit maybe fifth or sixth rather than second or third. So that's probably been the one bit, but it's been good. I'm trying to get the mix right between the logicals and the long shots. And I think today, again, there's a few opportunities that you can go looking for some value and nice payouts. And look, we've had a decent week so far.
Well, because people are watching and have it probably up already, we got the triumph in about 8 minutes. I mean, obviously, the focus. We'll talk about the Gold Cup in a minute. But anything clever in here? You got a 2-1 favorite in Blood Destiny, Lossy Mouth.
Yeah, Lossy Mouth. She's favorite. She's the main for Paul Tannen, and I think look, you've got Mullins, who has like three very strong horses, and with Lossy Mouth, Blood Destiny, Gallon Marceau, and I think actually has the fourth favorite as well. He's seven running. So look, I think. I went through this, and I think they're all very close in the ratings and close betting wise. I think if you want to try and find a little angle, I pick two that might be big improvers and might actually improve 10-15 pounds off their last one. But, and that's kind of the number six hypotenuse is for his first choice. John McConnell, who trained his first Cheltenham winner yesterday, the horse Seven, who denied my fugitives at a big price yesterday, he's running and has run once over hurdles and shaped quite well and beaten a few lengths by Zenta, who's running again. Zenta is kind of third or fourth favourite and hypotenuse is 50-1. So I think that's the angle I'm going at here and right to Tom, or right to Tom, number 10 horse, again is a crazy price. He ran once in November, again came back into a Mullins horse, and could be Tom Mullins, the trainer is a little bit of saying he's a very good horse. Again, he'll need to improve, but that's the angle I'm trying to go to here. But I wouldn't, this could easily go to form, but it's I think the question for handicappers today is they're just pretty great. Which of the Mullins trio do you want to be on at the start? And to be honest, I think they're all kind of the same, so I'm just trying to go a little bit different.
Well, Willie Mullins sending 7 of the 15 out.
Yes, he's had quite a, I think he's, could I hear, I think he's something like 76 runners over the 4 days, so yeah, quite a kind of a big arsenal to go to war with.
Unbelievable. All right, well, we're about 5 minutes away for the opener. From Cheltenham on Gold Cup Day, always a highlight. You know what? We might as well, since we've got you and we got time, and everybody has it laid out in front of them. How about in the second goes at 10:10 our time. This is the premier handicap hurdle.
Yeah, so it's the Vincent Boyne County hurdle. 2 miles. It's a mix of, we'll say, veteran handicappers who love this 2 miles, and then you have a few novices thrown in, and I think it's all about trying to find a horse who will relish conditions, will relish the run of the race, and just maybe have a couple of pounds up up his or her sleeve from the handicapper as well. So hard enough, like the front three or four in the market all make sense. You've Willie Mullins, Emmett Mullins, Dan Skelton horses who have their who have their fans, and I can understand why they're there. You also have the likes of Sharjah and Pied Piper, who are horses who are going back down in class. They've been running in graded races, and haven't been good enough to beat the likes of Honeysuckle or State Man, who ran well in the champion hurdle and mare's hurdle on Tuesday, but are running in this race instead. I picked a couple of horses, actually both trained by Noel Mead in Ireland, who has he went a long time without having a winner in Cheltenham, but he gets horses running well when the conditions and opportunities are right. And the first one is number 18 Highland Charge. He's going to go off at a crazy price. He's been running over fences at the start of the year and didn't quite work out, and he went back over hurdles last time, running over 2 miles 4. Again, in graded company, he came last that day, beating 20 lengths, but I think he ran a lot better than that form line suggests. And back down to 2 miles, we know he loves the soft conditions, and I think he could really powerfully run into the race, and will hopefully give backers a good one for their money. And also then the number 15, Pinkerton, is probably the first choice Noel Mead, with Sean Flanagan, his stable jockey, on board. You can see he's been running kind of consistently well this year. And I think conditions and the type of race will suit he looks a little bit more battle-hardened than, as a seven-year-old here. But I think he could be primed for a big one. So I'm happy to take the two Noel Mead horses, number 15, Pinkerton, and number 18, Highland Charge, against the rest.
Excellent, and this is a big bulky field, anything can happen. Two dozen go postward in the second, the third this morning will go off at. We will run the Gold Cup later, but the third goes off at 10:50, and this is the Bartlett Novice. This group, another bulky field of 20, and what are we looking at?
Yeah, so this is 3 miles for novices, and particularly on the kind of softer conditions, it'll be a bit of a slog. So, I try to look for two horses that will certainly relish the conditions, will last the trip. And I think, kind of my top choice will be number 5, Embassy Garden. So that's, the combination of Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. They 10-1 here at the moment. I think he improved drastically last time, I believe in Turles, when he won, and he won by, I think it was something like 30 odd lengths. And I think, ever since the start of this year, he'd been running over 2.5, and I just felt that he was going to re-relish. He ran first day over, the season over 2 miles, then went to 2.5, and then went to nearly 3. And he's just improved with the step up and trip, and I think he just looks like a big, strong, chaser in the making, and William Mullins and won with a horse called Monkfish a couple of years ago, and this horse, he mightn't be the same quality, but I think he has the same attributes in that he'll love the 3 miles, he'll love the soft conditions. So he's my number one choice, and similar comments apply to the number 6 horse favorite, the Champion Gordon Elliott's horse, and owned by Keegan Sands, Michael O'Leary. And again, he won a 3 mile graded race in Limerick at Christmas time. That Jeremy had a decent record in producing good horses out of this, and he looked really, really strong. He looked like he powered through over the 3 miles, and I think that's the type of horse that you're going to need. And there may be better. There's a couple more ahead in the betting. I'm not as sure that they might be better horses, but I'm not as 100% sure that they might be able to stay as well as the two that I've chosen. So I'm kind of happy, confident enough that one of those will be thereabouts towards the finish line.
All right. So for those that are taking notes, we're talking about the third, and here Kev's got interest in Embassy Gardens as the top pick. That's the 5. And I'm just making my notes on the pages. And then Favori de Chamdo for Gordon Elliott is the 6. Both Well, Embassy Guard's actually 8-1 and 10-1 for the six, Favre. All right, that gets us to the big one and the Gold Cup, and obviously, you know, the favorite is a top candidate here, and Gallopin Deschamps. We've got obviously because of what happened at the Grand National, Kev. We obviously are rooting for Shark Hanlon and and Uick, who, you know, it's hard not to be positive about him after Hanlon is really fun to be around. His trip to Florida for the Clips Awards and his really lovely speech that had him kind of, you know, his voice breaking and how important it was to him, and he called it, you know, the greatest moment of his life to come and win an Eclipse Award with Uick, and, you know, then of course bringing him to the pub. There's a lot to like about Hanlon and Uick.
I'm sure there's not too many horses who've done the America to UK prep race and especially to a Gold Cup. But I think the worry you'd have for Hewitt is just that the ground is probably softer than ideal. But I think even if he runs a decent race, he's probably the Grand National next month as a big target as well. So and they tend to get a bit faster conditions than the Gold Cup. So we'll see. But the Eclipse speech was fantastic. I don't know what he'll have up his sleeve if he actually wins it today. So, but we'll see. I tried my hardest to beat the number six horse, Gallopin Deschamps, the favourite for Willie Mullins and Paul Penn. And to be honest, when I see everything from the trends, from how he runs, from how he jumps, to the conditions, I think he looks very strong. He's short enough. He's between 6-4 and 7-4. But I think he's the right profile for this type of race. You tend to win it and kind of either your first or second go, and he's the up and comer. He'd be like absolute tired, was so good last year, winning by 15 lengths, but he just hasn't, he's run once, pulled up in Haydock in November and has had a bit of an interrupted prep for this. But when you saw how well Envoy Allen ran yesterday in the Ryanair after kind of a similar, not a great prep, Henry's, Peter Bromhead's horses are running well, so he has been well supported. I think he was probably about 10-1 last week, and he's back into around 9-2, 5-1. I let him beat me, to be honest. I won't have any money on him. I think, look, it'll be a great achievement for Henry if he can get back-to-back wins with a pre-card in the Gold Cup, and for Rachel as well. I think, to be honest, if I'm trying to pick another horse with Gallopin Deschamps, it's probably the number 10 horse, Protector, who I think actually he's about 20-1 plus on it, but I actually think he's a really great price. Conditions should suit. I think people are basing him off his last run in Cheltenham when he was favourite and got beaten about 5 lengths in the prep race, but I think he's a better horse than that. He came third last year in the Gold Cup. He was beaten a long way by a few stars, but I think, I think there's a reason why he's a better horse now. He's an 8-year-old versus a 7-year-old. And I think the noises from Dan Skelton are quite bullish. But I fancy him to run a big race. So they'd be, happy to side with the favourite, but Protectorat is the number 10 horse. It's probably the best side that I'm very keen to have on my side.
Interesting. And for those that see that name, Dan Skelton, they'll know that's a prominent equestrian family. They're brothers, right? Dan and
yeah, correct. Yeah,
yeah. And their father was the gold medalist.
Yeah,
was an Olympic. He was a gold medal winning Olympian.
Yeah,
and that's what I thought. All right.
They're
off, by the way, in the Triumph. We'll keep an eye on this. And hypotenuse ended up going off at 58-1, and we don't even know what Wright's O'Tom went off because he's 99-1. Could be.
We might never have to know, Steve. If he's
Well, that's the beauty of these, and you've found a few of these over the years between Ascot in some of those in some of the handicap races when there's 27 horses and there's triple digit offerings right now. You got a big price out front, Jupiter De Gitt.
Yeah, he's one way of running, and it's like this. He did a big price in his debut in Newbury when he just went off ahead like this. But it's interesting, Steve, when you talk about big prices, because I think you have to have a little bit of an iron constitution to be happy to see horses run last or second last at big prices.
Yep.
to keep going, and it's a bit of fun when they come through, and we got a bit lucky in the first race. Yes, I sometimes think when you're back in prizes, you need everything to go your way. And like even yesterday the first race where we had Stage Star and the other horse who ran second at 40-1, so that worked out. We took a bit of not long till May. We took a little bit of a gamble against the hot favourite Mighty Potter, and it worked out. So yeah, you just hope sometimes when they do work out that you have had the money in the right spot to make it pay. And I hope a few people did yesterday.
Well, Bowen has come forward with hypotenuse, Kevin. In fact,
yes.
As we come around, maybe we'll hear. Let's bring this up.
There. I just don't think the rider can steer Hypotenuse here, Sean Bowen, as they now reach the top of the hill. In behind them then is Zenta, not far away, Active Duty on the inside, Gust of Wind, as they now begin the turn left-handed. It's Gypco that leads, Lossy Mouth out wide, full of running at the moment, almost too much. Blood Destiny is right there as well, then Gust of Wind and Gala Marceau, Active Duty on the inside then, from Zenta, El Muhit and Jagard, and then Right So Tom further back to Ascending since as well out of touch now, together with Jacobet Cavin and the fading Jupiter De Gitt, heading down towards the second last, and Lossy Mouth is coming there strongly on the outside of Gypco, Blood Destiny, Gust of Wind in contention on the outside right.
A lot of chances
running around. Gypco and Lossy Mouth were first and second, and now they race on towards the final turn and the very long run to the final flight. Gust of Wind chasing, so too Zenta coming through with Blood Destiny and Gala Marceau. Now Lossy Mouth goes on into the lead, and Lossy Mouth is sent right across to the stands rail by Paul Townend, often the best place to be, challenged by stable companion Zenta and another stable companion Gala Marceau, and then Gust of Wind in fourth place, and behind those then is Ascending, Lossy Mouth from Zenta as they near the final flight. Lossy Mouth picks up a bit more over the last, good job, Lossy Mouth from Zenta in second place. Gala Marceau is back in third and racing up the hill. She's really opening up. It's Lossy Mouth by three lengths going up towards the line. Paul Townend pushes her out, and it's another win for Willie Mullins in the Triumph. Gala Marceau in second place. Third was Zenta. 1-2-3 for the Mullins.
Well, that not much in terms of prices, but another terrific performance, and what a nice filly this is.
Yeah, she's got her own. She's come back from actually she's kind of a very messy race previously at Leopardstown, where Gala Marceau actually got the better of Lossy Mouth. And I think most people with a kind of a better run fancied her to turn the table. Hence the price. And yeah, she delivered quite well, and actually it was kind of as Paul Townend generally does the right thing. He got her quickly over to the stand rail, and that's generally the place to be in those hurdle races. So had the rail to guide him and her all the way up, and was relatively comfortable at the line.
There we go, the opener, and press forward. We've got Kev Humphreys with us. He's home in Ireland. What did you say? When was the last time you were home?
The last time I was home was actually September 2020, so 2.5 years.
Nice. So the folks get to see the baby, and there'll be a nice. How long is How long are you staying?
Just short of 2 weeks.
Nice, very nice. So a nice holiday for the Humphreys. Let's turn to the fifth. This is the St. James Hunter, and this is a 3.25 mile chase. Kind of a lesser group. What can we scare up in here?
Yes. So this is yes, usually for our hunter chasers, and I think again the market probably speaks volumes here, in that the big field of, I think, 23, and I'm actually the favorite being number 23, Vosselaar. He's the one that looks like he's the new up and comer in the hunter chase scene. You see a string of ones to his name this season, and I think he David Christian, Brian O'Neill are kind of household names in the hunter chase scene, and actually you may remember last year, actually they had a horse called Wing Leader, who pretty much was leading the whole way, and got shinned on the line by Dillaway in this race. So they come back, Dillaway comes back again as, I think, second or third favourite, but Mosselet is probably a better horse than Wing Leader, so I'm probably going to be happy enough to side with him, and he'd be kind of one of my stronger bets of the day. Again, the other one I have on my radar is the number 13 horse, the Milan. And I think, again, he's, if you look at his form, it kind of ties in with the likes of Bosselet, Dillaway, Wing Leader, and so on. I think, you know, it's very good form. And I think, again, he's been very well in soft range in the past. And at 33-1, he's a prime candidate to be placed at a big price.
Very nice. Let's... Is there a companion play here?
So it was number 23, Bosselet, is probably the main bet there, and number 13, Le Milan, is kind of the side bet.
All right. Short field in the Paddy Power mares, group of nine, and you seem willing to acknowledge Impervious from Colm Murphy, but you actually got Dulcita involved here from Mullins, who might be a price.
Yeah, so I think that this probably revolves around Impervious and Allegor de Vassi, the two favourites, who are about 6-4, 7-4, and they are the ones that when you're looking at it, they have the best form. Allegor de Vassi has been probably putting up eye-catching wins by big margins, whereas Impervious is probably being with better company and she beat a horse called Journey With Me, and actually as a mare giving the gelding some weight last time, which is an impressive performance. So I think Impervious probably is the better jumper. I think Alec Gordopassi may be the more talented horse. But again, I'm not sure, she'll jump as well as Impervious, and I think for that reason, I would side with the number three horse, Impervious. I think the angle I've got here is that, again, her when she gets soft range, she tends to be a very, very capable mare on her day, and with Willie Mullins, Danny Mullins on board, I'm happy enough that she's going to go a little bit under the radar. So I think she's the third choice of Willie. These horses here, so happy to take a flyer at a big price with Dulcita.
Very
especially
nice.
With the brand the way it is.
Well, Dulcita is the five for those that don't have the PPs and don't have the plays up, and Impervious is the three. That gets us to basically a handicap, a nightcap to wrap it up, and this is, again, two dozen of them going 2.5 miles. This is a hurdle, and you're going to take the big swing to finish on a high note. You've done that before when it comes to nightcaps at Ascot and at Cheltenham. But Felix Deji, and this is Gordon Elliott, that is trading at 66-1 in the markets, the one horse.
Yeah, so look, this is a 2-mile-4 handicap for conditional riders. It tends to be actually won by quite decent horses. So actually, interesting enough, Galopin Deschamps, the Gold Cup favourite, won this 2 years ago. So it has a good role of honour. And actually, kind of interesting enough, the number one, Felix Stacey, is already a Group 1 winner. He won 4 years ago at Aintree. So he's kind of on, you know, he's a 10-year-old now. I think the angle I have here is that he won't mind the conditions at all. He's only won once over 2-mile-4, and that was last time out where he ran a good race in Navan. And you know, I think the class can pull him a long way here. And I think when I saw the price of 61 kind of last night, this morning, I just thought with a class horse like that, definitely worth playing with him on side. And I think particularly when over here we have we get extended place offerings that 66 was just a no-brainer to me. You've got quite a few from Elliott and Mullins here in this field, and the second choice you have is the number 13 horse O'Floron. Again, ran well in it last year, came seventh off the mark of 137. He's running here today off 135. He's a 6-year-old versus a 5-year-old. And I think he ran well enough last time out. He comes here today off a better prep run than he did last year. And Kieran Buckley is rising today. Had a steer on the first time last time out. So again, I think that familiarity will help. He tends to be a little bit of a tricky ride, but I like the fact that the jockey has been up before, and again, if he runs a little bit better than he did last year, that kind of puts him into kind of third or fourth type of territory. And if he runs a little bit even much better, he could be looking at a big price winner.
Nice. All right. Well, that's what we're after. That'll go at 1:30 this afternoon as the seventh. It's a conditional handicap hurdle, and Felix Deger, the one, and then Offleron, the 13, as well. Well, Kev, as always, outstanding. Enjoy the trip. It's always great to catch up with you. We'll talk to you next at Ascot in June. Do you have a stateside trip planned at all? Are we going to see you for a Breeders' Cup, maybe?
I'm off to Ascot this year, actually, for the first time in a few years, which I'm really looking forward to. And it'll be great to get back into Top Hat and Tails. And stateside, I'd love to get to the Breeders' Cup this year. You can go direct from Singapore to LA. So it's something that's on my mind. I just need to figure out a couple of things. But yeah, it would be great to do it. I when it's out in California, I absolutely love it. It's a great few days there. So fingers crossed I can manage it. But it might be more. I wouldn't quite say it's an even money shot. It might be maybe a 2 or 3 to 1 shot to happen.
Not so bad. All right, we'll take those odds. But we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you for Ascot. And as always, the long shot lad, everybody. Kev Hum on your Twitter. Follow Kev, and Kev will undoubtedly. We don't reach to you for Dubai World Cup, but that's only a couple of weeks away, and I'm sure you'll have a few plays, right?
Yeah, I'll have something up for Dubai. I think it's especially the like Saudi Arabia and even Super Saturday Dubai. It's been quite good entertaining days, particularly with a lot of international form lines. So and I think, well, I heard the Japanese have a massive contingent going to Dubai, so it'll be interesting going through all the form there. But looking forward to that.
Kev, have a great trip at home. I appreciate it. We'll see you soon. We'll talk in June.
Thanks, Steve. Take it easy.
You got it. Kev Hum, everybody. Kev Humphreys, a long shot lad, and we wandered into him years and years ago. He became a Derby trailer. He'd come over from at that time from Ireland and join us at big events, particularly Breeders' Cup. And we you know, we adopted him. And he was so much fun. And the reputation for just, you know, finding horses that, you know, that a lot of North American types just aren't going to get to. He does an amazing job, and has already this week, you know, probably about even. So it'll only take one good one today to send everybody home on the positive side. Let's see what Scott Shapiro's got for us as well, and we'll start to dig into the weekend. Plenty of interesting action, and Oaklawn in particular looks like the major focus. There's no Derby prep this weekend. Next weekend, in fact, the next few weekends will satisfy our cravings on that front. So this is straightforward, just good old-fashioned stakes like the Essex and the Whitmore, and of course Shap also keeping tabs on the action at Turfway. Scott Shapiro, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you, sir?
Outstanding, and looking forward to the weekend, and looking forward to heading to Ocala on Sunday.
Nice. I could use some Florida, but not going to get it quite now. But plenty of action, of course, overseas, and then at Turfway, Oakland, etc. But a little bit of a calm before the storm, especially for my world, with two big days next Saturday shaping up. Of course, the Louisiana Derby card is going to be fantastic, as well as the Jeff Ruby card. So both of the big final preps, if you will, at the Churchill Downs Inc. Tracks are both running tomorrow. I don't know if you've spoken a lot about the probables for those fields. The Ruby will be drawn Tuesday. The Louisiana Derby will be drawn tomorrow. But got a list of probables if that's not something you've
Far. Go ahead. If you've got them, let everybody know.
Okay. Yeah, the Ruby really coming together well. You've got Major Dude for Todd shipping in from Florida. Also, he's going to run Point Proven, it looks like. Fantastic again for Wesley Ward, who was awesome when we saw him last at Turfway. Wadsworth, who was gelded before the meet in Florence and really is either the ultimate equipment change woke him up combined with the all-weather surface, but he's been real good for Cox and Godolphin. We've got two Phils coming, opting to race there. The pedigree, not surprising, but ran a couple of good races, of course, at Fairgrounds. Quadri Island, another Brad Cox runner, Scooby Quando. So should be a full field and pretty high quality for the Ruby. Good to see that. And should be a lot of fun. I mean, that's going to be a fantastic card in Florence. And then the Louisiana Derby, going to be at a big field there, no surprise. Looks like Brad Cox is likely to send out three with Instant Coffee, Jace's Road, and Tappet's Conquest. So those haven't really tackled each other yet, but that'll be interesting. You got, looks like Asmussen's going to send out Shopper's Revenge and probably Disarm. Looks like Pletcher will have King's Barnes, which I know has been reported. Amos likely to run back Curly Jack. You've got McPeak likely to run two in Sun Thunder, the runner-up in the Risen Star, and then Dennington, who ran to the wire with Cagliostro for Cherie DeVoe. They're likely to go in there to run. And Baseline Beater for Neil Pessin will be a big price. And Single Ruler for Keith DeSormo likely to run back. So two big fields, pretty wide open event. Should be a lot of fun.
It is, you know, you mentioned Todd there, but isn't Litigate going as well?
I think I heard, I think he's off the Derby trail.
Oh, geez, I think
that news came through yesterday.
I missed that.
So I heard a couple days ago he wasn't going to be in the Louisiana Derby, and then kind of looked, you know, found out yesterday. I think he's off the trail in general. Don't have the specifics on that, but definitely not going to be coming to New Orleans next week.
There you go. Well, yeah, Litigate. Yeah, there it is. Too bad. All right. That's too bad.
Yeah, ran well. It ran well, and the Sam F. Davis was looking forward to him coming to New Orleans as part of the Pletcher duo. But looks like it'll just be King's Barnes, at least at this point.
All right. Well, well tons to do on this week, and of course having the Fairgrounds card draw the way it does a week out. gives everybody
so great.
Yeah,
it's so great.
It really is.
You know, it's especially for those of us that are, you know, working on things days in advance. You get plenty of time. A lot of times when they're drawn on Wednesdays or, you know, a few days before, you're rushing your handicapping, you know, and this way you get plenty of time to think about these things long in advance. I absolutely love them drawing their cards when they do.
Well, Oaklawn actually out in front as well, and let me reach for my Oaklawn package because the stakes, there we go.
Yeah, there's the two stakes are all I looked at tomorrow, but they came up fine.
Yeah. All right. Dive in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Whitmore, which is goes as race eight, the first of the two graded stakes, looks like there's going to be an honest pace in here. You've got Edge to Edge for Hartman. You've got Empire of Gold. You've got Pirate Rick, who's very fast, and then Cogburn towards outside of all of those. He really seems to only have one way to go. So I'm going to look to horses that can come from off the pace and get the job done. I think Tejano Twist is the obvious one. Ran a good second to Goodnight in the King Cotton over the slop on January 28th. Has been given time since then by Chris Hartman, who has him at Edge to Edge in here. Run two good races at Oaklawn, so you don't have to have any concern about the affinity for kind of a unique course, if you will. One over the fast going, and then in the King Cotton. So I think he's pretty obvious. I'm going to, you know, he's my pick. But I think I want to look for some horses underneath that can maybe pick up the pieces at a price. And the two that I came up with were Miles Ahead, who has been freshened up after the third place effort in that same King Cotton. I think he should get a good trip, race over the surface. And then Spangster, who's drawn on the inside, just the fourth start of his four-year-old campaign. Not sure, Steve, if he's quite good enough for this at this moment, but I think he's going to get such a good trip here. I think he's going to get the jump on Tejano Twist and probably Miles Ahead and just save ground along the inside. So I'm going to play two with Tejano Twist over Spangster and Miles Ahead in the Whitmore.
Interesting. There's a couple of horses that I just have affection for, most notably Flash of Mischief from Broberg, who feels like a horse that's kind of alternating efforts. I mean, if you look at the Vance win and the Ring the Bell performance, and then in between the Breeders' Cup and the King Cotton, you know, you would say to yourself, well, he was outclassed, quote unquote, in the Breeders' Cup, but not entirely. I mean, he, you know, for those that are sheep players, he's kind of got a classic alternating pattern, and he's a horse that can sit mid pack, stalk and go.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Christian Torres, which is a nice formula at Oaklawn in general. And what are we looking at price wise?
9-2.
All right. I mean, it's okay.
Not too bad.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah, he's just going to have to avoid kind of, if he can sit off, he's going to get kind of that trip I think Spangster gets as well, but on the outside. It'll just be key for him to relax. He's been along the inside and over the slop in each of his last two.
Yeah. I also, you know, going back a few Breeders' Cups to Empire of Gold's try with Declan Carroll. So did I. I was all over him.
And that was exciting for a minute.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He did so well. All right. Well, this is a good, it's a good addition to the Whitmore, and, of course, it'll lead to the Count Fleet during the festival. Starting, I should mention, there's a good group going to start the pick four in the seventh, and the Nightcap is an Arkansas bred maiden special weight. The Essex follows. Sometimes at Oaklawn they seem to split these stakes up, but they run successively. I'm sure that's a TV deal with New York.
Yeah, you would think so.
This is a fun bunch in the Essex.
Yes, and while I was somewhat chalky, at least on top in the Whitmore, I think these are some vulnerable favorites in here, at least based on the morning line. You've got Last Samurai, who Not to take anything away from the son of Malibu Moon, but he got a real good setup last time, a good trip under the aforementioned Christian Taurus. Feels like now with an outside draw, probably a horse worth taking a chance against, especially at that price. You've got Vittorio, who's the 3-1 morning line favorite. I know he ran well to finish second to Charge It. The margin of victory a little misleading as Charge It was under a death grip and Vittorio was trying and a real fast pace to run at. So I'm not overwhelmed by either of their chances. And then you have Forza de Oro, one of two in here for Brad Cox, shipping in from New Orleans along with Tawny Port. And this horse really had things his way last time in Grade 3 Louisiana and was unable to hold off Happy American and Mr. Wireless for the second straight time. So I don't know if he's ever going to get back to those efforts in 2021. Which he might need to do when he was in the Bill Mott barn to beat a group like this. I mean, Necker Island will probably take some money, but I think he's a late running or, you know, a one turn type. So I'm going to use some prices in here. I think, Call Me Fast is a little bit interesting on the front end in here. If, Classic Causeway and Fabian Pratt opt to sit off Call Me Fast, of course, Classic Causeway was between the Challenger at Tampa and this, and Kenny McTeague opted to give him the extra week and try this the Essex instead of running at Tampa. And then I think Silver Prospector merits some respect on the inside. Who you like?
I at 6-1, absolutely that's who I like. You know, he came back that second off the layoff effort in the allowance. Okay, it was a wet track, and he's had good performances on off going before, but he runs back to that. Silver Prospector, very viable in here, and I don't think there's anybody that's so scary. I'll take every bit of that. 6-1. I should mention, if you go back to. It was the Steve Sexton mile. He did react. That had been his career top, and he reacted to it. There's no doubt in the Cornhusker. So that's the one proviso that he has reacted from big efforts in the past. Other than that, as a 6-year-old now, he's just he can put performances back to back. A little bit more. I don't think he's ever won. He's a 6-time winner. I don't think he's ever won 2 races in a row. So
that's a good point. Yeah, you put the exact same exact number on the thoroughgraph in that Steve Sexton mile and reacted big time at Prairie Meadows. So that's definitely a concern. But if you're getting 6-1, it might be worth the gamble. And I'm going to include two bigger prices as well. Rated our superstar, who just I don't know if he's up to this, but I'm leaving him off at 20-1. Just doesn't seem like a good play if I'm going to take a chance against the favorites. And I know Tawny Port will have to run a career best, but I think he needed the last race in the mineshaft. Yes, it was an underwhelming effort off the bench, and he did kind of – the races he won as a 3-year-old were against kind of the second or third tier, if you will. But maybe he can take a big step forward. He's going to be a big price, and maybe he's just along for the ride with Forza de Oro, but I get the sense that maybe he's going to run at least better than he did when he disappointed at 3-1 in the mineshaft.
Make one other case here, just because the guy is just murder. Hartman's got Necker Island that, I don't know, it seems like this was the goal, or this and the Oaklawn handicap. This is one of those horses when you forget about him, he gets involved. He's a chronic board hitter. He's he's been running short, but he has gone longer. He's never hit the board going a mile in the 16th. But I don't know. I mean Hartman's a problem.
No, no doubt. It wins a lot of races in general, and of course, at Oaklawn. And again, if you're adopting a strategy to try to beat the favorites, particularly in the late pick 4 or pick 5 or even the pick 3, leaving out horses that have a chance that are bigger prices, is probably, if you can afford it, is probably a silly idea. Because I don't have a super strong opinion. I just think it's more wide open than the tote board is likely to suggest.
Fair enough. For those of you that are playing the pick four, and if you're scared of these Arkansas maiden races, you really shouldn't be. Look at them; they're pretty formful. There's a horse. Doug Anderson's got a horse in here that he owns, coming off of a fairly lengthy layoff, but now a 4-year old. This is Street Strategy, and she is 8-1, and so she caught my eye. You get Kylie Jordan aboard, and then Moquette's got a firster in here. The 9, who was 6-1, Nagala. So there's two to certainly use. There's a couple of shorter prices. The favorite comes from John Prather. Hey there, Joji Girl. And she's 3-1. And then you've also got a 9-2 in here from Ronnie Cravens, Diamond Grand. They ran pretty evenly in the seasonal debut, a 3-year-old by Include. So don't be intimidated by these Arkansas maiden specials. They've been very formal.
No, they're good races. Those are decent horses. Yep. I didn't get a chance to look at that race, but I spent plenty of time handicapping Arkansas bred races, and those special weights can be good. You know, do your work, watch some replays. You can find just as much good stuff in them as open special weights.
Excellent. All right.
And couple at Turfway tomorrow. You know, a calm before the storm. Like I said, kind of a meat and potatoes type card. But in race 8, I'll be keying in on number 3, Samurai Prince. It's a second level allowance event. It's the last leg of the early pick 5 and the first leg of the late pick 5. So a good horse to have a key in. Won't be a big price, but ran really well off the bench. And what I like most about this Gelding Steve is he ran real poorly as the favorite. Well, not real poorly, but ran poorly as the 7-5 favorite back in July of last year at Churchill in an open 25 race. First time he'd been in for a tag in a little bit, and the claim was voided. He went to the bench for a while, and Billy Moore, you know how it goes with these voided claims. It kind of gives you a license to drop, if anything, and instead of dropping, he brought this horse back in a first-level allowance event. You know, found that extremely positive, and he loved it at Turfway, and he ran real well that day. He actually ran a career best 93 on the Brisnet scale, and now it moves up in class, and I think he's going to wheel right back and run another big one.
Nice. All right.
All right, and then the other one tomorrow, a little bit more of a price, is race 8. It's a $30,000 non-winners of 3, 6 furlongs. And I think number 2, Cunchin Bridge, is a little bit interesting here. First off, the claim for Cipriano Contreras. I think he might get a little bit overlooked, but he's cutting back in distance. He's never hit the board in 2 starts at Turfway, but both those are the last 2 starts when he was gone a mile. And I think this is a really strong late-running sprinter for the level. He ran a couple of big races at Churchill over the years, and I think there's going to be an honest pace. So on the cutback, the barn change, and an inside draw, I think number 2, Cunchin Bridge at 10-1 is going to run a big race.
The 2 in this 30-claimer, non-winners of 3 lifetime. 9:25 Eastern, and Samurai Prince in the 5th, which goes at 7:55. No stake tomorrow at Turfway. They're
tonight instead. Yeah, tonight instead.
You got anything? You got a thought about tonight at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's the let me pull that out. It's the WEBN Frog Stakes. It's for fillies and mares, 4-year-olds and up. Another one of the $125,000 non-graded stakes events that we've had a lot of in Florence. And I don't see a lot of speed in here, which makes me want to lead on number 4, Quarry of Comet, who takes on Stakes Company for the first time. She's really taken into a liking to Turfway Park's all-weather surface, ran good on debut last year to be beaten just a nose. 3 starts this winter, 2 wins in a second. The loss was a tough luck loss when she took the lead a little bit too early. And last time out ran a good victory at the non-winners of 3 level. And there's just, like I said, not a lot of speed in here. And I think Gerardo Corrales is likely to take advantage of the lack of speed. So I'm Quarry of Comet. You've got opening buzz coming back, cutting back in distance after a uncomfortable but extremely disappointing effort trying two turns in the Wintergreen. I would think Luan Machado will be very likely to just take this one back and make a run. But Jonathan Wong, I think he's on an 0-for-40 at Turfway.
How about that?
Blended in, yeah, with records at Golden Gate, wins at other tracks, including Golden Gate. But I think it's an 0-for-40 right now, so a little bit tough to swallow the 5-2 on him. And then the other one interesting to me is the other Lobo. That's number 2, Thunder Love, who has been ridden more aggressively of late and has won 2 straight races. But I don't think they're going to get caught up in a battle with each other, the 2 Lobo runners, Thunder Love and Quarry of Comet. Maybe they can run 1-2 around the track.
Yeah, Quarry of Comet coming off the win. Well, the WEBN Frog Stakes, a classic. for those of you that live in and around the tri-state area, this race was around for a long time, and then it sort of I think it went on hiatus for a little bit, and then WEBN came back I guess as a sponsor, but the WEBN the Frog, so great.
That's good stuff. I don't have the history here in front of me. I probably should know a little more about it, considering it's a home track. But I'll learn now that I didn't have it today.
Yeah, I think I just remember that they, I think another radio station stepped in at some point and sponsored, and then the name came off. But I'll have to look that up, because that I remember that it was, people were disappointed that the Frog had. It was off the, was off the stake schedule.
I'm looking here. Let's see if I can find the history. There was, we ran it last year, and Caravel won it.
How about that?
And then it was 2011 before that. The last time it was run, so a 10-year hiatus for the WEBN Frog, but back and back better than ever, getting a winner like Caravel. Club Car was second last year, Thundering Cream third, so that was probably a little bit of a stronger, classier group.
But, pretty classy.
Competitive race. Yeah.
That is a good group. How about that? Yeah. Have a Breeders' Cup winner in the Frog. Now it's etched in stone. Now it's a command.
Exactly.
All right. I'm glad we brought it up. A good deal. All right.
Yes, sir.
Shap, before you go, do we have a, how about a leaderboard glance? Who's on top? Twin Spires leaderboard.
Let me pull it up. I didn't, wasn't prepared. One second here. I'll get that.
No problem.
Leaderboard. All right. The leaderboard. It looks like it is Cody from Kentucky, who I believe was the same gentleman that was up top last time. We just had the Tampa Bay Derby. He has 360, but with the formful victory with Tappet Trice in the Tampa Bay Derby, a lot of people made up some ground. Doesn't look like Cody had that one, if I'm reading correctly. I think he had 360 last week. I could be wrong, but Mark from Illinois with 310, Michael from California with 309, and then several more between 300 and 308. So after the top spot, which there's still tons of time with 100 points to the winner race coming up, it's a log jam for second, third, etc. So it's going to be a lot of fun, as it always is, over the last several weeks leading up to the Derby.
Excellent. All right. It'll start to get serious. Make sure you know, if you're playing, don't forget, you got to get your picks in. Did you, and also I should ask, how did you end up doing anything in the future wagers?
I ended up not playing Instant Coffee like we spoke about last week, because the scratch with Arabian Night coming out, it kind of took away some of the money that I was hoping would go on him. But I played a couple of long shots in the Oaks pool. I played South Lawn at a zillion to one. I just haven't seen anything that's overwhelmed me in this three-year-old filly leading up to the first Friday in May. So I played Southlawn, who will be in the Fairgrounds Oaks for Norm Cassie. I thought ran really well first off the bench. And who was my other one in there?
Yeah, I do this, the same problem.
It was another really big it was the McCarthy runner that I don't even really know if that horse is 100% going to be, you know, she's going to have to run well to make the race because she has no points or anything. But hold on, I got it here. Name, this is real poor here. Clearly Unhinged, who I thought ran huge on debut, but... You know, big if, but these are almost 100-to-1 type shots that I just still waiting to be wowed. All the fillies that I thought were going to wow me, Steve, have yet to do so.
No, that's been a common theme actually. We keep we hearing that repeated.
Excellent. Right. So somebody's going to step forward here, and you know, in the Derby ranks too. I mean, there's been Forte and everybody else for the most part. I think. You know, you can make cases for others, but we're going to get wowed a few times over the next few weeks. I'm pretty sure of it.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp, 34. Good luck. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week ahead of the monstrous Ruby Louisiana Derby weekend.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome. Super pumped for it, like you mentioned. The PPs will be out for the Louisiana Derby card tomorrow, so plenty of time to dive in. We've got Art Collector running on the undercard, and going to be a lot of fun.
There it is. Twin Spires weekend preview at the races continues. We're about 10 minutes into hour one. Make it hour two. Callie Francois is going to join us. They got a very nice card. It's the Pot of Gold. It's Pot of Gold Day. Andy Serling says my accents aren't good. I'm no Frank Miramati. I understand that Miramati killed him last week. Leo Vukmanovich told me that at the Cowbred Awards, Frank emceed, of course, and I guess he had everybody absolutely doubled over. He did a shtick with Baffert and Lucas, and he did his Lucas imitation, had everybody. He's unbelievable. Callie's going to join us. We've got Hammer yet to come, of course. Nick Tamaro. I gotta reach Welsh. We haven't talked to Mike in like 3 weeks. So let's get Welsh in here too. Get a chance to mention, I didn't realize until poking around the internet, social media, I didn't realize what a reaction, the rather old news that Belmont was going to add a fourth surface. They're going to add a synthetic. People reacted to that the other day as if they had been struck by lightning. It's only been discussed, I don't know, for 10 years. That when Belmont got renovated, they would include a synthetic track for winter, potentially. It's just amazing. And oh my God, they're going to ruin Belmont. If you're so in love and you worship Belmont so, why aren't you out there then? Why are there 300 people? I've never seen a reaction on the internet. It's unbelievable. Oh, it's Belmont. It's my Belmont. Yeah, it's a new. There's a requirement here to update a building that just doesn't work. It's also, there's no heat, by the way. If you hadn't noticed, there's no heat. Unbelievable. Oh, God, a synthetic surface. What do you think? They're going to tear up the whole track and just put a four oval wide synthetic track in? Unbelievable. Back after this, hour two.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to...